cricket, lovely cricket. Cricket lick the ball. Welcome along, everyone, to listeners old and new. And I bet a lot of you are listening to this on catch-up, because obviously there's an England football game going on. But maybe some of you hate football, can't stand it. I know there are people that do exist like that. If you are listening live, very, very welcome to you all. This is, of course, 98 out on Phoenix, 98 on the FM dial, via the internet, phoenixfm.com. Shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. And, of course, head to mixcloud.com. Many, many ways to listen. And, of course, don't forget to follow 98 out right across social media, or on Facebook, Twitter, or X. And Instagram, also wherever you get your podcasts, and also there's a YouTube channel. No excuse to miss out. Now, tonight's show could go down as a collector's item, because I'm going to attempt to go live in about 10 minutes time to St. Lucia and talk to Ali Martin from The Guardian, who has been covering the World Cup, and he will be telling us all about England's performance in the early hours of today in the Super 8s against host West Indies. There's also all the latest from the T20 Blast, with games going on this evening. There's also the latest in a World Cup game between Afghanistan and India in Bridgetown, Barbados. I'll give you the latest on that one. We also look forward to the return of the County Championship this weekend, with all the results and fixtures from the Essex Premier League. All the usual news and views. And some music as well this week, coming to you, time permitting, from Orbital, the Brothers Johnson, and Everything But the Girl. Always an eclectic mix on this show. Well, sit back, strap yourselves in. This could go brilliantly, or it could be a complete disaster. You really cannot go anywhere. Lick many for me, I go check out the school. Tell you about the sun, and you no feel no way. In a different style. And a good evening to Dan Hagger, who is at Chelmsford watching Essex playing tonight. He's got me on his headphones, he tells me. Big Essex fan, Dan Hagger. And of course, if you want to get in touch, email radio@phoenixfm.com, or use any of the social media messaging functions on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and let me know what you are thinking. And as is tradition, we will kick off with cricket birthdays of the week. First up, Shane Watson, friend of the show, 43 years old. Steve Rhodes, 60. Moeen Ali, 37. Kyle Abbott, also 37. Keaton Jennings, 32. Nick Winter, the Australian, once of Brentwood Cricket Club, 31. Jason Ratcliffe, the former PCA chairman, 55. The legend that is Alan Lamb, 70. Another Essex legend, Ray East, is 77. Ollie Hannan-Dolby is 35. New Zealand Jeremy Coney, 72. Former Essex star Varun Chopra, 37. West Indies cricketer Deandra Dottin, 33. Riley Meredith, 28. Marnus Labuschagne, 30. Jack Leach, 33. Jerome Taylor, 40. Aaron Burns, 36. Barry Hearn, 76. And a former presenter of this show, Nozomi Azar. Plus listeners, Kay Westrap, Sarah Day, Michelle Randall, another former presenter, Paul Webb, yes, Webby himself, 52, I think it's today as well, Dave Simmons, and Christine Hewitson. Happy birthday to all of you guys. And remember, if you want to have your name or someone you know added to the Cricket Birthdays of the Week list. Email radio@phoenixfm.com, title your mail Cricket Birthdays, and tell me all the details.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Right, I shall play some music while I just get myself organised. So in the meantime, here is Orbital, and this is Chime.
This is Phoenix 98 FM. Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Hello, my friend Darren has allowed me to come on to his fantastic Phoenix 98 FM show to talk about the July issue of the Cricketer magazine, which is out now. Mike Brearley hopes West Indies can give England a good battle this summer. David Gower says the ICC should help West Indies more. We have George DeBell previewing the series. We have Richard Sydenham talking to the players who appeared in that fantastic 1984 Lords Test match. And we talk to friends of Jimmy Anderson. That's the July issue of the Cricketer magazine out now.
Make sure you get Hughes' excellent magazine. Right, it's 6:15. Latest scores from the football, should you care. And I'm guessing that you've switched that off and listening to this now. It is still 1-1, 15 minutes into the second half between England and Denmark in Frankfurt. And there's some cricket going on as well in the World Cup. Afghanistan are playing India in the Super 8 section of the World Cup. India batted first. They were 181 for 8 of their 20 overs. Currently, Afghanistan are at the halfway stage after 10 overs. So they have got 66-43. So they need 116 runs to win from 10 overs with 7 wickets remaining. There was another Super 8s game going on last night, and England were in action in a very hot and humid St. Lucia. And I should, if I'm lucky, have live on the line from St. Lucia, Ali Martin, who was there in attendance. Ali, can you hear me?
Hello, Darren. I'm here. I'm hoping I'm loud and clear.
I've just heaved the biggest sigh of relief ever. First time I've done Zoom live on air. You are live to the Phoenix FM house. Do not swear, as Davina McCall used to say.
No worries. It's just about 1:15 here, which is I normally get potty mouthed after a few rum punches, but I've not started yet, so don't worry.
I've heard off the cuff reports that a few of you out there from the media pack have been getting involved with some rum punches. I won't name any names, Don.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be rude. You know, you really have to get into the rhythm of the island here to do your job properly, reporting on it for a national newspaper. And the rum punch is very much part of that. So that and a bit of soca music, you just got to get into the vibe. Otherwise, this tournament will escape you.
Yeah, we'll talk later on about who busts the best moves. Yes. Excellent. So St. Lucia, a great venue for any type of cricket. It's a bit different because last time England were there, and when England usually tour the West Indies, the crowd is mostly England Barmy Army fans that kind of pack wherever they're playing, whether it's St. Lucia or Barbados or Antigua. But I think from what I've seen and heard of this match, it wasn't quite the case. There were more local support for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of been a theme of this World Cup, really. I think there was probably an assumption by putting England in the tourist islands in this tournament that the fans would sort of come en masse. But obviously it being June and relatively warm in Europe and just a sort of, you know, a short hop away to Europe on Ryanair or similar to get a bit of warmth. But, you know, it is kind of more of a winter sun destination for England supporters. So it's been more the kind of independent travellers as opposed to the tour groups that have come out. And equally, there's, you know, I find it very interesting that this sort of, you know, the lament that West Indies cricket is, it doesn't have the place in the heart of the Caribbean people like it used to. I've always found that a bit strange because I think this is my fourth or fifth tour out here. And, you know, even though England fans do take over the grounds for Test cricket, the passion still really does burn brightly here. And we've seen this week in St. Lucia a couple of brilliant crowds, and also that crowd in Trinidad the other week for the New Zealand game the West Indies were playing, and they do come out in their droves to support the West Indies, and they create a brilliant atmosphere. It's kind of, you know, without, I don't want to sound like too much of a snob and what have you, but it is great to see a Caribbean ground filled with the locals, because they make such an incredible electric atmosphere. You know, the soca, we were walking into the ground last night, they've got the steel band outside, they're panning out hits from David Rudder and Nadia Batson and kind of those kind of things, and then you walk into the ground and it was this soca calypso tent. It was absolutely pumping out there. The crowd going wild, albeit silenced at the end when Phil Salt went on that crazy rampage against Romario Shepherd, 30 runs in the over, just to completely ice that run chase.
Yeah, it was finally, I mean, so far for England fans, this has been the nail biter of nail biters. You know, Scotland rained off, thumped by Australia, and then will we get the game? I mean, we're 45 minutes away from disaster last Saturday, but finally we got a game on and the England that we know and love turned up.
That's right, and it's not been dissimilar to the T20 World Cup they won in Australia 2 years ago. You know, that kind of stuttering start, rain-affected games, and kind of almost bodging your way into the next round. But once there, you know, now they're here in the Super 8s, it has kind of felt like a bit of a reset. The points reset, the run rate resets, etc. And with great weather in St. Lucia and a really good batting, that's a really good pitch that Ken Croft and the local groundsman has produced. It's kind of the gold standard in this part of the world. You know, it's kind of nice and flat, and it's got good bounce for the seamers as well. But, you know, we even saw last night that it was actually the spinners, you know, Adil Rashid and Mo and Ali that put the brakes on that Windies first inning. So there was a bit there for everybody. And I think that has certainly been to England's to England's taste. And yeah, we saw it last night with a pretty commanding performance, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there was a fear going into this game that it was going to be a batter's paradise. And I think of all the wickets we've seen so far, I've actually quite liked the fact that having sat through what actually became for me quite a boring IPL with just sixes being hit left, right and centre on smaller boundary ropes, that all of a sudden that wasn't the case in this tournament. But that's just, for me, made for much more exciting games.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting, actually, I think, particularly the American side of it. I didn't cover the American leg for The Guardian. My colleague Andy Ball was out there for that one. He wrote some great pieces, which I definitely recommend looking up to your listeners. But the kind of the notion that, you know, it should be all fours and sixes and that this isn't a great advert for the game as it's trying to break into a new market, I sort of disagree there. I kind of thought those low-scoring thrillers, that was, it might not have been much of an advert for sort of T20 cricket, as we know, and certainly not, as you say, like the IPL that we saw recently. But I thought it was a good advert for cricket, you know, the battle of bat against ball. And I think cricket's always a bit more fun when the bowlers have got something to work with. It was a bit extreme at times in New York, admittedly. But yeah, this kind of low-scoring, you know, kind of quite tight and quite gnarled kind of cricket that teams are having to play to sort of transcend those conditions is making it a really fascinating tournament.
And, of course, there was the discussion, shall I say, about the hybrid pitches being used in the States. But from now on in, we are in the West Indies and we're playing on proper cricket grounds, which I think helps it all. As I just sort of mentioned, currently as we speak, India and Afghanistan are playing in Bridgetown, which is another fantastic place to go and watch cricket. As you say, when I've been out there before and seen both sides of that coin, of one of grounds being completely dominated by England fans. But I can remember going in 1998, I think it was, to Bridgetown, when it was the old stadium with sort of corrugated roofs and wooden bench seating, and the locals with whistles and conch horns and the sound system belting out music left, right and centre. It's good to see that back. And also, after the game, if you sort of head to one of the local rum shops or bars, you can get dragged in. I mean, the passion is, that's where you'll see it, because people will quite happily get into a very detailed and knowledgeable discussion about what's going on.
Absolutely. I've been chatting to a lot of the locals since I've been here. And both, you know, kind of bar. But I mean, Antigua was quite a sleepy week, I'd say that. And that's also not the best ground, just given its location right in the middle of the island.
It's a bit
of a schlep for locals to come to, especially for neutral games. But certainly in Barbados and St. Lucia, you know, there is a real buzz around the place. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's got their opinions. And they love big opinions here in the Caribbean. Oh, I mean, yeah. West Indies have kind of gone from heroes to zero overnight. There's a few people gristling about their bowling attack and not being a bit toothless beyond Akil Hussain and what have you. But yeah, the passion runs really deep. And it's been interesting as well. I've quite enjoyed some of the conversations around guys like Jofra Archer and Chris Jordan. You know, especially being in Barbados, you think there could possibly be some resentment about their switching allegiance to England and being part of an England team playing over here. But it's just pride in the individual, pride in the game. There's no resentment. It's very much seen as kind of, you know, a success story, whatever team they're playing for. Maybe that's part of West Indies itself being a bit of a construct. You know, it's a kind of multinational regional team, as it were. Maybe that kind of eases it a bit as well. The passion certainly runs brightly here. And last night in particular, that was a cracking atmosphere. They put on a great show at the Darren Sammy Stadium. We've got a day game tomorrow against South Africa, 10:30 start. These 10:30 starts are kind of a bit of a compromise that the sport's making, because we know that it's the Indian television audience that pays the bills. Mm-hmm. And to get prime time viewing over there, you do need the earlier starts, but really, cricket in the Caribbean T20 cricket in the Caribbean, I should say, is all about those kind of soupy nights under lights where, you know, the white ball's flying into stands that are kind of, sort of bacchanalia going on out there as well. So, it's been great to enjoy a night game last night, because England's schedule has been predominantly day games.
So let's talk about the game in some sort of finer detail. So Phil Salt, who has kind of been the quiet man of England the last sort of couple of years. As you said, a fantastic 87 not out. And Johnny Bairstow also sort of came to the party and showed why he's such a brilliant white ball player, particularly in T20. I mean, when he's in the mood and he's I mean, I don't think there's many more powerful hitters of the ball than Johnny.
No, and I think Johnny was felt a little bit singled out after the you know that heavy defeat to Australia in Bridgetown. That he was kind of singled out in that run chase. It was a bit of a struggle for him then. Conditions possibly went against him that day, and Australia, as we know, because of some of England's mistakes with the ball in the first innings, were a good deal over par with their target. So it was a pretty tough ask. He kind of singled out a couple, as he tends to do, singled out a couple of journalists in his most recent press conference, and kind of said that they need to have a look at themselves, which is sort of classic Johnny. But you know when he's in that kind of bristling mood that it's not actually the worst thing for the team. And as you say, he played a great hand last night coming out there. I mean, the game was still in the balance at that point. I think England were kind of tracking with the West Indies score at the halfway stage. Johnny walks out, and Phil Salt, who, having lost Josh Butler, had kind of decided just to sit in a bit. And it was very important at that phase that Bairstow came out and played the way he did. And that took a bit of the pressure off Salt. Salt's innings I found very interesting. I think his sort of rise up into the international team has kind of been all out aggression, hasn't it? And what they kind of like is having that all out aggression next to Butler, allowing Butler to give himself a chance. But when Butler went, Salt actually saw a chance there to sort of gather himself a little bit. He wasn't afraid. I think he even said in the press conference afterwards, because he feels more secure about his place in the team, it allows him to sit in a bit more when conditions dictate. And I found that very interesting, that he's growing in confidence as an England player. It's allowing him to sort of show that he's not just a kind of pedal to the metal, thrash it kind of opener, that he's got different gears. And so he had that, you know, he had a decent, you know, a quick enough start, sits in the middle, and then Johnny, takes apart Akil Hussain's fourth over, which is pretty critical. And with the matchup at the other end and the wind in his favour, and Romario Sheppard coming back into the attack, Sol saw his opportunity, and that 30-run over, six successive boundaries? Absolutely broke the back of it. And pretty good signs for England. Looking ahead, I did feel a bit sorry for Sheppard, though. He popped over back to Guyana for the birth of his second child, only just to return to the team. I wonder whether West Indies will regret putting him straight back into the 11, because Obed McCoy had a pretty good game against Afghanistan on that pitch two nights earlier. That was possibly a bit of a misstep from them in selection. And Sheppard, who's probably, I think I wrote it in my report, but... you know, he's going to be dealing with a few messy late night situations, you know, with a new baby in the house.
Oh yeah,
and that 30 run over certainly was one.
Yeah, a lot was made going into this game about the West Indies attack, and Romario Sheppard's name was mentioned, as was Akil Hussain. So I'm just wondering whether the England boys specifically went after them, and that Romario Sheppard that went for 30 runs, that has more than anything done wonders for England's net run rate.
Yeah, absolutely. And with sort of South Africa playing out a sort of slightly, I mean, it was 18 runs in the end, so it was probably never in doubt, but it was a slightly tighter game against USA. A game that, you know, with all due respect to USA, you probably look at as one where you try and boost your net run rate.
Yeah.
England getting there with 15 balls to spare last night has given them a bit of breathing space in the net run rate column. And actually, I think if they beat South Africa tomorrow, and I'm that's not a given, far from it, they're a quality side, South Africa, but if they beat South Africa tomorrow, that will do, you know, they'll pretty much have one foot there in the semi-finals already with USA to come in Bridgetown on Sunday. So, it was a good win in more ways than one, not just for kind of getting England's campaign up and running, but actually it could give them a big advantage if the semi-final spots do come down to net run rate.
It's a quick turnaround. Any thoughts on that? I mean, is it just part of this stage of the tournament that everyone's got to deal with, or, you know?
It is, and it's interesting. It was almost, that first round was great, and 20 teams, seeing some new teams, Uganda, Nepal, USA, Canada, you know, they've kind of all brought something, but it was quite a slow-moving first round. I almost wonder whether cynically designed to kind of give the bigger boys, you know, a nice sort of cruisy first round where they could kind of build up a bit of momentum, almost, I hate to say it, but almost like a warm-up phase at the start of the tournament. But now, it comes thick and fast. And you know, England, for example, they have a kind of, I think they would have got back to the team hotel last night about 1 a.m. They're going to be back out there playing tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. So it's just kind of rest and recovery in between. Then they get on a flight to Barbados and play the USA on Sunday. You know, and traveling the Caribbean, as you know, as a visitor here, they can be sort of long days, draining days as well. So it is a sharp turnaround, but you know, it is the same for all teams now, because this is the sharp end of the tournament. And these guys are pretty used to it. I mean, a lot of them, the IPL, for example, you're jetting around, you know, similar kind of region there in terms of air miles and what have you. So, and then, you know, playing back-to-back games. So it's nothing they're not used to, but it is a quick turnaround. It's probably just a day of relaxing, getting in the pool, some of the fast bowlers, you know, just cooling down and getting the muscles loose again to go again. But yeah, it all starts again on at the same ground, of which England now have the advantage of having played there the other night. They've had their first archer at the pitch, albeit that was something that didn't help West Indies last night, given that they had a game against Afghanistan on that pitch 2 days earlier.
Yeah, it's funny what you were saying about sort of how the tournament was sort of geared at the start, and how the fixtures and groups were. It didn't necessarily work out though, did it? Because we've got no Pakistan, we've got no New Zealand for the first time, and even Sri Lanka are missing. And those are teams that you would have probably expected to see through, certainly to the Super 8 stage.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, I guess what was 12 test playing nations, or 12 full members. Zimbabwe aren't here, so that's 11, but there was always going to be some cut when it came down to 8. But yeah, kind of Pakistan's absence is probably the big headliner there. That was a proper shock. I mean, goodness knows what's going on there, Cam. They've had so many changes in leadership from board level right down to head coaches. They swapped the captaincy as well. In some ways, they were a kind of upset waiting to happen there, given that chaotic build up. And I should say, it wasn't to sort of diminish that first round. I thought it was really enjoyable. USA are clearly, you know, they're here on merit in the Super 8s, and they've kind of been the surprise package. You know, there were some one sided games. You kind of expect that, but I think people have kind of noted that the gap does seem to be closing, and that can only be good for the world game. It does feel like a proper World Cup. You know, 20 teams is great. It's much better than that kind of, I never liked that kind of Mickey Mouse qualifying round that teams had to go through initially before the big boys joined them. I like everyone to start at the same starting line, level terms, and then you fire the pistol in there and see who charges out the box best.
And I think that's the beauty of the T20 format, even whether it's the Vitality Blast here, maybe the IPL, but certainly at a tournament level, at World Cup level. Anything can happen, and all you need is a bit of a slip up, a bit of a mistake, a pour over, or you know, a great batting performance, and that can swing games. And if the minnows, to be given them a sort of a term, if you like, with no disrespect, but you know, they'll come into this and these kind of games thinking, well, we've got nothing to lose. And I think we've seen a lot of that, and maybe the writing was on the wall when the USA turned over Pakistan earlier on.
Yeah, absolutely. Although it's kind of, it's funny. I mean, I thought Scotland did have a good campaign, and they did well against their fellow associates, and obviously had a decent turnovers against England before the rain fell there. I do wonder whether they're going to have flown home and be slightly kicking themselves. I don't think they would have a better chance to get through to the Super 8s than they had that night with Australia, you know, slightly off the pace. I mean, as much as we had all that brouhaha beforehand about kind of manipulating the net run rate and what have you, Australia then, you know, kind of backpedaling a bit on that and saying, no, you know, we're going out to win and what have you. But I just wonder that they were off the boil that night. They dropped 6 catches in the field.
Yeah.
They laboured a bit in the run chase, almost to the point where you kind of thought, are they kind of setting themselves a bit of a challenge here to try and, you know, gear up for later in the tournament? That was a golden opportunity for the Scots, and I just think they're going to regret that, looking back, as well as they did play in the tournament.
They've always got the football Euros to look forward to. So looking forward, so England, as we've said, play South Africa tomorrow, and if they win that, does that guarantees a semi-final place?
I mean, it wouldn't guarantee it, because I suppose all teams could still end up with, well, the top three teams could end up with 2 wins apiece. Actually, no, that's not true, because South Africa, if they beat West Indies would be able to... Yeah. 1 win, yeah. So, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I'm now currently doing the math right in my head. Yeah, it would pretty much all but book it. Albeit the big factor in this World Cup, which complicates things, is that, again, going back to those Indian TV rights and Indian TV audience, is that India, in the playing regulations, are guaranteed to play that second semi-final in Guyana, no matter where they finish.
Hmm.
So kind of jostling for position and trying to work out where you want to play your semi-final and where you're going to go through is not easy until that other Super 8 group is kind of decided. So we don't quite know where England are going to end up. All the press pack are kind of a little bit twitchy about it, because it's not easy to get to Guyana and then to Barbados back for the final. It's slightly easier the Trinidad route, but really it's almost out of England's hands as well, because everything hinges on where India finish in their group.
Yeah, I've done that journey a couple of times to see family in Guyana, and yeah, from Barbados. I think when we used to do it, unless things have changed, you go from Barbados to Trinidad, sit around all day at the airport of Trinidad, then get another flight down to Georgetown. It basically used to take us a whole day to make probably a 2 or 3 hour journey.
Yeah, it's not straightforward. We're doing all sorts of kind of calculations on the logistics, but I'm certainly not going to complain, because as hot as it is here, and it is very hot in the Caribbean at the moment, it is probably my favourite place of tour. It's an amazing place. Just the culture, the vibe, obviously the beaches, and as I mentioned earlier in the show, they're kind of those soupy nights under lights in with the music pumping out. I love it.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, listen, I'll let you get back and get out there, because it is lunchtime out of there, I suppose. Have you had any lunches yet, or are you going to go and have...
No lunch yet. It was. I think we got back from the Graham last night about 2 a.m, but because of the deadlines and because of the time difference, which is 5 hours at this time of year, It was pretty much wake up, crash out the next piece. But yeah, hopefully this afternoon things will mellow out, particularly with the newspaper's focus being on the football.
Yeah.
Is he still one all, by the way?
I don't know. Hang on. Let me see, because I'm so cricket-centric on this. It is still one all. 79 minutes played. England pushing forward to look for a winner.
Yeah, well, I was trying to persuade my office this morning that this need covering a World Cup is more important than a European Championship in football, but... I got very much put in my place there. football is still king. Fair enough. I have to accept that one. But it's great. It is great to be out here. This does feel like a proper World Cup, and it's great to see a World Cup that's kind of moved away from the kind of the big three and being hosted back in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I would urge everyone to follow Ali on X at Ali Cricket, and of course. Subscribe to The Independent and pay a bit of it. It's not a lot of money, but just it all
No,
helps.
The Guardian. Don't subscribe to The Independent. Subscribe to The Guardian.
God, what am I talking about? Why am I thinking The Independent? The Guardian. There's lots of, not just Ali, there's lots of great content in that newspaper. So make sure you like and follow and do all the necessary. Ali, thank you for your continued support of 98 Out. It's been absolutely brilliant. You've helped us for so long. I do really, really appreciate you helping us out and coming on and talking. It's always great fun and great entertainment. So I will let you go and find a shady sun lounger, get yourself a cold drink and a flying fish sandwich. And dream.
I'm working hard, Darren. I'm working hard. Don't give away the secrets.
All right, Ali Martin from The Guardian. Brilliant talk, and we'll catch up soon.
Cheers.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Well, there you go. The technology worked. Thank God. I was so convinced that was going to fall to pieces. But we got him. So that was Ali Martin from The Guardian. He was live and direct all the way from St. Lucia.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Right, we'll just have a bit of music while I get myself together. This is the Brothers Johnson and a disco classic, Stomp. We'll be right back.
is Phoenix 98 FM. Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Charman, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport. Every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning 10 till 12 with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8pm at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. Prawn cocktail.
I love
a prawn cocktail. I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain.
In fact, I never stop talking. And I rubbed basically all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day.
Michelle.
I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
Excellent programmes, as always, on Phoenix 7, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Speaking of which, after me at 7 o'clock, Andy Furno is here with Chilled Soulful Thursdays for an hour. Then at 8, you get Bumper to Bumper with the velvet voice of Gareth Williams, a trawl through Indian alternative music from the 1960s all the way up to now. And then an excellent show again at 10 o'clock, The Night Shift with Madeline Christian. Tonight, Madeline will be talking to Christian Haynes, who will be telling us all about his brand new single.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
If you care, the football, it's Denmark 1, England 1, 88 minutes on the clock. So England's doing as they always do at tournaments and just shredding everyone's nerves. Back in the world of cricket, there is a Super 8 game going on at the World Cup. In Barbados, Afghanistan are playing India. As I said earlier, India got 181 for 8 off their 20 overs. Afghanistan in the chase are 108 for 6 with 16 overs and one ball bowled. So they need 74 to win from 3 overs and 5 balls, they've got 4 wickets remaining. Looks like that's going to be India's game, but you never know with these things. You never know. There's also a lot of cricket going on closer to home tonight. There's the Vitality Blast. Glamorgan have got underway against Gloucestershire. Glamorgan are batting after 3 overs and 5 balls. They are 23 for 1. And then at 7 o'clock, the following games start. Birmingham against Northants, Essex against Hampshire, Middlesex at home to Surrey. It'll be interesting to see how packed Lords is tonight, because I was there last week and it wasn't busy at all. Surrey are hosting Kent. And at 7.15, it's the Battle of the Roses. Yorkshire are playing Lancashire at Headingley. Perfect night for T20 cricket, I must say, if you are there. And I know Dan Hagger is down at Chelmsford listening to me on his earphones. It is absolutely perfect. Perfect temperature. You can have a cold drink and enjoy lots of superb cricket. So if you are down there, then very well done.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Just looking around the world of cricket, and there's a bit of news that I've just sort of picked out for you. Kane Williamson has turned down a new central contract with New Zealand cricket and has stepped down as the Black Caps white ball captain. The 33-year-old, who is New Zealand's all-time leading test run scorer, said he remained passionate about playing international cricket, but also wanted to pursue an overseas opportunity during the home summer. New Zealand's centrally contracted players must be available to play international cricket and in the domestic T20 Smash competition. That tournament is likely to be in January, and it overlaps with a number of other franchise leagues, so I guess that's what Williamson is eyeing. Maybe they pay more money. Such is the way with crickets and cricketers these days, particularly those that are in, let's say, the second half of their career. Now, with New Zealand having played such little, or there's little international cricket scheduled for that month, Williamson looks set to play abroad. Now, I've just talked about the T20s that are going on, but it's a really, really busy time. There's stuff going on left, right and centre. And something to shout about is the return of the County Championship. Yes, we'll be watching red ball cricket without 10 jumpers, an overcoat, a hat, gloves and a flask. If the weather's like this on Sunday, which I think it is, it's just Saturday looks a bit ropey. There's some brilliant cricket to go and watch. So in the in Division 1, Essex are hosting Durham. Kent are at home to Lancashire. Nottinghamshire against Somerset. Warwickshire v Hampshire. And Worcestershire v Surrey. And you might remember that after the last couple of games, there's been a lot of jostling at the top of the table. So all of those games will have a bit of jeopardy in them. So keep a close watch. And if you can get along to any, please do so. In Division 2, Glamorgan are hosting Northants, Middlesex against Derbyshire, Sussex host Leicestershire, and Yorkshire are playing Gloucestershire up at Scarbados. Brilliant venue, really, really picture postcard stuff, and quite lively. I went up there once to watch Essex play there, and it's a proper full-on Yorkshire crowd up there. So, yes, it will be brilliant, so make sure you get along.
98 Not Out, sponsored by Shepherd Neame, proud supporters of cricket in Essex.
And I thank Shepherd Neame for their continued support of this show. We are looking for more sponsors, though, so if you are interested in having your company's name associated with the fine brand that is 98 Not Out, please get in touch. Email radio@phoenixfm.com and I will give you all the details. Now, coming back to Essex, some interesting news this week. So firstly, Worcestershire have re-signed bowling all-rounder Ben Allison from Essex and Brentwood on loan for their next two county championship matches against Surrey and Durham. He will be one of at least two changes to the pair's side as they return from the T20 Blaster Championship duty for the first time in 3 weeks to play county champions Surrey, as England spinner Shoaib Bashir is still there on loan from Somerset. 6'5" Allison, aged 24, has not played any first-class cricket since joining Worcestershire on loan for the final three championship games last season. He took 5 wickets and made 134 runs as the club secured promotion back to Division 1. Lots of rumours on social media about that move being made permanent. we shall see. But anyway, good luck, Benny. He's a top man and a top player, and it'd be good to see him getting some regular cricket. Now, meanwhile, at Chelmsford, Essex has signed South African fast bowler Ethan Bosch for 4 county championship games. I don't want to see any more Tom Skinner or Big John memes on that anymore, please. Bosch has signed for 4 county championship games, the home fixtures at home to Durham and Worcestershire, and the away games at Surrey and Hampshire. So go well, Ethan, and it looks like quite an exciting signing, and should be bolstering an already decent seam attack at Essex. So it'll be good to see him in action, and I hope he goes well. Club level at the Essex Premier League. Now, last weekend, if you cast your mind back to Saturday, it was an awful day in these parts. Real horrible wind, rain. It was freezing, and the rain just sort of switched from heavy rain to hailstones and back again, and if it wasn't doing either of that, there was a steady drizzle, and that basically decimated the weekend's fixtures in the Essex Premier League, with only Brentwood getting a result, and this was really, really important. They beat Hornchurch by 5 wickets. Hornchurch chose to bat, and they were bowled out for 138, with George Hankins top scoring with 40. Jack Hebron took 6 for 51 under gloomy skies. And a solid top-order performance saw Brentwood get home in 20 overs and 2 balls to grab the 20 games. All the other matches, as I said, were either drawn or abandoned. So that win moves Brentwood up to 3rd in the table behind Chelmsford and Colchester. But just 12 points separate the top 3. Chingford remain bottom. So this weekend, weather permitting, I think it's going to be all right, but there are chances of showers, and it may just be localised. So I'm pretty sure we will get games on everywhere. So if you are in the area, get down and support these clubs. So Brentwood are at home to Hutton. Buckhurst Hill are hosting Chingford. Chelmsford against Colchester, big game that one. Loughton are playing Hadley and Thundersley. And Wanstead, another big game, Wanstead are playing Hornchurch. All games are an 11 a.m. start, so get yourselves along. Support your local cricket club, you know, buy a drink, buy some snacks. If there's some food on sale, buy it, eat it, enjoy it. And sticking with Brentwood, on Sunday, their first team are into the last 16 of the National Cup. They beat Swordstone by 6 wickets. Australian import Jordan Silk hit 94. The aforementioned Benny Allison, 73 not out. And well bowled Tom Oakley, who took a 4-for. And remember, put this date in your diary, Friday the 19th of July. England cricket returns to the Old County Ground. It's the England Masters team, which is always full of big names and big stars, come down to play Brentwood. Hospitality packages are available. They include a champagne reception, a 3-course lunch with complimentary wine, exclusive pre-match entertainment with tables hosted by a PCA legend. The last time I went there, I had Alex Tudor on my table, and he was brilliant. You also get priority access to the live and silent auction. So that's Friday the 19th of July at Brentwood Cricket Club. Email events@brentwoodcricketclub.co.uk and you will get all the details. But get yourself along. And it's always a very popular event, well attended. So get yourselves down and get a table and support what is an absolutely superb cause. Right, that's it from me. Thanks to Ali Martin from The Guardian for being my guest tonight, all the way from St. Lucia. Thank God the technology worked. I will be back next Thursday, 6 till 7, as always. Stay tuned. Andy Furno is here with a soulful hour to take out to Gareth at 8. I'll catch you next week. Take care.
On a chain, you see.